of limited resources. We have problems with gender. We have problems with race. We're handling the debt. We still need to know how to address the debt. We need to examine the local stations, and local stations need to internally examine themselves. We need to think about ourselves uniting as a network, and including also the questions that the listeners have raised, that public comment has been raising about the fact that there are questions of appointed seats that need to be discussed, that there are small turnouts at bylaw meetings, that governance is still an issue. What is it to be democratic? Democracy means all the people participating. And at the same time, we are still facing a national crisis. We are still facing the fact that this signal, that the effort to shut down civil rights, the effort to shut down our right to speak, is still first and foremost and prominent, not only in our minds, but in the news. We know that at any moment, a new threat to our civil rights is going to be brought before us. What is the one way? I would also like to point out that at the same time that we have won back the station, that we have a great settlement that we're addressing, and that we should be very excited about the prospects of what's before us. What do we see here? We see very, very few people here. Here we are in Berkeley, the first station, the station where 10,000 people came out to fight against the lockout, and there are very few people here tonight. There are very few people here, and why is that? I feel that it's because people don't feel that we have any power, that the community that can protect this station, the community to which these stations were allegedly returned, is not present, and perhaps because we feel we have no place, that we have no power. What is the way to address this? What is the way to address all these crises? The way to address them is to open the signal, to address them to the community, to be able to speak about these issues. We have met great resistance in every signal area. I have heard people discuss the fact that they cannot speak, that they feel that they're still being shut out, that there's no time for airtime, and that they have no power to save their own station, is really what the situation is. We have no power to save what is absolutely at stake. And there is a project that we have been talking about since March that we have been designing with listeners, members of the community from all five station areas, and that is Pacifica Matters. Pacifica Matters is urging that the stations, that the network, open the stations to genuine listener dialogue, genuine listener participation and discussion of these issues, that all of these matters could be brought to a discussion on the air, allowing all aspects of the communities to talk about them and to participate in them. Working groups at the stations could be speaking on the air every week for genuine, thorough, ongoing address, 3 hours a week, at 2 hours to prepare people for this, to point people to people that these discussions would be going on and that they could participate in it. The governance of the stations should be an ongoing part of the governance of the stations. The community participating in the discussion and in the solution of the problems, so that we can truly, truly protect our station. The Pacifica Matters Project, we have proposals here that we will be here all weekend. The board has proposals before them. We urge everyone here to talk to the board and to take it into our hands to help us facilitate a genuine address of the issues before us and a genuine redirection of the reorganization of the power at the station so that the communities can truly protect it. Thank you.
Thank you. Again, I really want to ask people to stick to 2 minutes. It allows us to have more people speak if everyone speaks to the two-minute time limit. David Moore, then Bob Bloom, then Tracy Larkin.
Thank you. I'm David Moore from Streaming Audio Connection in Montana as a listener member. Thank you. I want to call your attention to this suggestion that's come out of conversations with people at every station area about a Pacifica Code of Ethics. I know many of you on the board have this in front of you, and this venue is perhaps the only other place where we can bring this up, so I'm taking a moment, and I'll be brief. The basic idea is that a mission statement reassessed and rededicated is crucial, and the democratic process of restructuring the network is historic and vital, but that those two elements are perhaps not sufficient to avoid the danger of co-optation of the mission yet again in the future, and that there may be certainly qualitative commitments that we all need to make as a democratic network to reinforce our communication values as they fit into the mission. But the suggestion here is that we can even structure into the democratic governance process a qualitative review of our behavior as network members and as broadcasters. It's very simple. Local boards and the national board will establish periodic qualitative review of Pacifica operations and productions at every level of the network to maintain accountability to Pacifica's mission of contributing to understanding among individuals and societies. And I want to thank Leslie especially in this evening for calling attention to the backbiting issues, the communication issues that every area is complaining about. And I think it really requires that kind of leadership and example to make that culture of communication and consultation really happen. But I think we can also institute some measures towards that. And thank you for considering.
Hi, everybody. I'm very glad to be here. I'm going to change the pace a little bit. Fortunate enough to have been one of the lawyers in the Judy Barry her first Daryl Cherney case. And it's very good to be here as the second major victory of the year. And I want to invite you all, that's why I'm up here, to invite you all to a celebration of the victory that's happening tonight after your meeting. It's beginning about now, but it will go on into the evening. It's in Berkeley at Cedar and Bonita, the Unitarian Fellowship. And you're all welcome, everyone up there, everyone out here. Please come, and you'll have a good time. And it'll feel really good for you to be there. It'll feel really good for all of us to have you there. Okay. So thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
And, of course, everybody in the Northern California signal area as well.
Okay. Next,
I also want to mention that this is KFCF in Fresno.
Kelly Ramirez and then Bill Mandel. 2 minutes each. Tracy? Well, is Kelly here? Okay, but let's hurry, folks. Right? Kelly, Tracy?
Again, coming up after the community comment, we'll be having a report regarding the hiring of the permanent executive director and then an update about the Pacifica Archives.
Hi. Tracy Larkins, I'm from Los Angeles. And I'm reading a statement written by Larry Chin of Online Journal. Assuming the issue of 911 coverage and Michael Rupert's attacks are not going to be a part of official business, I'd like to see a monkey wrench tossed into the meeting. Ladies and gentlemen, nothing we've discussed in this meeting is important. These relatively trivial matters are dwarfed by the only issue there is today, and that is the 911 war that continues to take lives and rip apart what little is left of democracy, and the Pacifica Network's studious and calculated refusal to properly report the truth about it. What kind of community service has Pacifica done by failing to allow the real voices of resistance and criticism to be heard? What kind of network is this that allows its programming to be taken over by elitists and apologists for the U.S. government, such as Norman Solomon, David Korn, Chip Riley, Mark Cooper, John Wiener, Sonali Kolhatkar, and then used as a weapon of character assassination, slander, and censorship against investigative journalists such as Michael Rupert from The Wilderness, who have shown the courage to speak the truth about our government, who have dared to investigate, report, and inform the citizens of this country about September 11th and what it is really about, who have attempted to save lives. Can any of you in this room feel anything but shame about how this network has utterly failed to live up to its origins and its founding purpose? We live under occupation, under the rule of perhaps the most dangerous American government in history. This is a time of war, and the September 11th war is being waged against all of you and every single person listening to Pacifica, with rare exception and despite the big talk of being any kind of resistance radio. Pacifica has played the progressive fiddle while Rome burns. Until this network pulls its pathetic head out of the sand and faces the issues of 9-1-1 and end the attacks against Michael Rupert, there is no reason to support it or any of its programming, and it will continue to lose the respect and pledge dollars of its listeners. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
I'm Kelly O'Ramaris, co-producer of Guns and Butter, The Economics of Politics, and a KPFA news reporter. And I've got news for you, Pacificans. Bush knew. The administration allowed the 9/11 attacks to occur to garner support for a war the American people would not back otherwise. A war without end that is being used to fill the pockets of the defense contractors, to gain control of the Central Asian drug trade for the benefit of Wall Street, and to destroy our constitutional rights. This is the story of all our lives, and Pacifica's coverage is dreadful. KPFA will broadcast gavel-to-gavel coverage of the public session of the Joint Intelligence Committee as it prepares to further convince us that the United States is the global superpower, despite the CIA and FBI that are the modern-day equivalent of the Keystone Cops. How many of you know that Porter Goss, co-chair of the Joint Intelligence Committee, is a former CIA case officer? Do you know that several of these committee members received campaign contributions from the Carlyle Group and the Big Five defense contractors? How much faith can you put in those hearings to get to the very bottom of this story? Yet I don't see any of these so-called progressive pundits who fill Pacifica's airwaves, people such as Norman Solomon, Mark Cooper, or David Korn, questioning the credibility of this committee or questioning whether the hearings should be on KPFA's air. This committee that includes past and current members of the Trilateral Commission, the Council on Foreign Relations, and the Bilderberger Society. Do you know what these organizations are? They're mechanisms of the New World Order. I didn't learn about them from Pacifica. I learned about them from Guns and Butter's inaugural guest, Michael C. Rupert, from The Wilderness. And when GMB brought him back to during the February fundraiser in the form of a lecture excerpt that raised funds at a level one staff member called Amy Goodman numbers, out came the self-appointed gatekeepers to attack Rupert's credibility. They can't nail him on the facts, but they can spread lies. And their lies have marginalized Guns and Butter. Today marks the first day I have had any real conversation with a programmer other than my ally, Wendell Harper, about Rupert or 9/11 foreknowledge, even though everyone at KPFA and a few people on the national level know I have lived with this story since October. And when I talked to that programmer, she indicated her interest in a debate between Solomon and Rupert because she herself wasn't up on the story. Since when do reporters have to debate their reportage? There are people who have disappeared into the INS Gulag and the Navy brigs, including now an American citizen, and there are public affairs programmers not up on the story? Shame on you, Pacifica. Shame on every public affairs program on the entire network is not crawling all over this story and leading the ouster of this illegitimate, feeding, treasonous, murderous, warmongering excuse for an administration. Spending so much airtime on these armchair quarterbacks who haven't done a lick of their own reporting on the story, while people who have done so are ignored, belittled, or vilified. And I can't help but notice that Rupert's biggest critics at KPFK are connected with The Nation magazine, no real friend of the dissidents in the recent struggle. Who has really won that battle? Is this the Pacifica I got arrested for on July 13, 1999? Is this the Pacifica for which so many people are being asked to give so much money? I call on every dissatisfied person dissatisfied with Pacifica's 9/11 coverage to let your voice be heard at these meetings and at your local stations. Our lives and our freedoms depend on the truth being heard.
Thank you. Thank you. And our last comment from Bill Mandel. This will be the last comment tonight. So that's it for tonight.
The inadequate attendance tonight is exactly what I expected, and the last speaker, I think, explained it. What has made this network great has been that its attention has always been focused on the great issues of the day. And I learned from an earlier participant in the discussion that there actually was a mechanism whereby that could have been done that would have made a difference in the attendance tonight. I wasn't aware of the proposal for editorials on issues of the day coming from the board. Had there been attention to that, people would have been interested to know what this network thinks about the issues that disturb the country. I think that's something to remember for future meetings. What I wanted to speak about is exceedingly simple. I look at the board physically, and I see two things. One, that the fight that some of us began 40 years ago to secure African-American representation in, I think, adequate numbers has been won. That does not mean that issues of racism have been settled, but representation has been won. What I also see on the board is not one Latin American. Is there one? Okay. I wasn't aware. I see in the audience, we had one participant, Mr. Maldonado. I see in the audience a Latino who managed for many years perhaps the second best radio station in the area, a longtime KPFA listener. I see in the audience a Puerto Rican who symbolized our fight against the police behavior against KPFA a couple of years ago when he was arrested and tried and we won his acquittal. But for a station or a network to conceive of itself as representative of the issues and the groups forming the American people today without a single Latin American on the board is exactly as wild as the situation we had until about 1960, when we would invite Paul Robeson to speak. We would invite Langston Hughes to speak, to read his poetry. But there were no representatives of that group on the board. I think that the station has to address itself to that issue. The network has to address itself to that issue with recognition that you've got 30 million people, in some respects the most active politically in the country today, large organizations, numerous issues to be addressed.
Okay, thank you. I want to thank all the speakers, just briefly on the last comment. I think this board is aware of that issue. It was addressed at the last meeting in Los Angeles, and I think we are aware of our composition. We also are acutely aware that we come out of a settlement agreement, that it would be hard at this point to change the composition of this interim board, which only has 9 months left to its existence. But we are aware of the limitations of this board, not only in terms of what you point out, but others also. There aren't a lot of us on the board who are youth, for instance. We're all kind of past the youth cap age. You know? So, I mean, there are a number of very serious limitations on this board. Nonetheless, we have to try and move the work ahead. Before we move the agenda, and again, I want to thank everybody who made their comments tonight, and we will do our best to address them during the course of the weekend and one-on-one and other ways that we can do that. So thank you all. I also, just before we move the agenda, I want to announce that tomorrow evening, Saturday evening, June 22nd, is a reception, the Pacifica Foundation Listeners Reception, at the Radisson Hotel at the Berkeley Marina, which is where the members of the board and a number of other people from out of town are staying. That's from 7 to 10 tomorrow night in the California room at the in the Conference Center building at the Berkeley Marina Radisson. $5 donation is requested. Many of us who are here this weekend will be there also and able to meet you and hang out in a more informal way and hear your ideas and, you know, stick our brains. Okay, so why don't we move along? The next agenda item is Marion Barry, who has been the chair of the Executive Director Search Committee of this board, is going to give us a report.
Thank you very much, Chair Leslie. The committee is composed of Chair Leslie Kagan, Carol Spooner, Teresa Allen, Joyce Barnstone, myself, David Furtick, Rayla Forrest, and Bertrand Lee, which is eight of us. In our January report, George had not come on the board, so seven of us, but after January, he joined the search. We sent out a number of announcements about the executive director's position. We couldn't come to a decision before our last meeting. And after that meeting, Leslie suggested we ought to extend the time frame so we get a larger pool of applicants. That time frame was extended to May 10th, 2002. We did receive over 65 applications, which was all over the nation, not just our five signal areas. And the committee met telephonically on a number of occasions and narrowed this down to nine. And on June 13th, which is last Thursday week, the committee narrowed the nine finalists down to three. And let me just say to the other members of the board and the audience, we had some very, very outstanding candidates to apply for this job. And quite frankly, under the circumstances, the crisis we're going through, I thought it was really a testimony to people's faith and belief that the organization was now moving again in the right direction. We wanted to invite the three finalists to Berkeley to meet you all, the audience, and listening audience, on last night. Between the time that the committee narrowed the search down from nine to three, and from that point on, one of the applicants, for a lot of different reasons, dropped out of the process. And so we went forward with bringing two people to Berkeley. And last night, you all heard those two people. We asked questions about members of the board and the public.
Those two people were
Warren
Durland
and Jan Crawford,
currently
morning.
Acting as executive director.
Approximately an hour and a half or so for each candidate to come forward. There was a lot of discussion, a lot of debate about the decision. It was awfully difficult for all of us because we had two outstanding candidates. But we had to name one. And I was trained as a chemist, and you can't occupy the same space with two people at the same time. You have to decide. And after much deliberation, the board voted. We had a preliminary vote, and then we had a discussion about that. And it was unanimously decided by all the members of the board who were present that we would offer the job to Dan Coughlin.
Dan Coughlin, currently acting as executive director and now permanently hired, and we hope to have an interview with him after this particular board meeting is over.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Leslie, let me just say that it was not an easy decision, and I emphasize the fact we had two outstanding. We had more that didn't make the nine, but these final two were just outstanding, and the decision was...
Question, is that a process? January quality that you were talking about. What hypocrisy.
This is nonsense.
Madam Chair, this is...
First of all, can we just see if Marion is done with his...
Let me just say that all of us on the committee were very aware of the gender question, the race question, or any other question about that. And the final three, you had an African-American woman, a European-American woman, and a European-American man. And we think that was rather reflective. In the nine, you had more than that. And so we think it was reflective of our intent to do it. But when it finally came down to it, we had to try to decide on who we thought was the best person for this job.
Okay, we'll take one question. Just one question.
Question internal, the process that we're used to eliminate some of the candidates in terms of posting that job, and I wonder if it's possible, but briefly, to let us know where that job was posting that, you know, that we were looking, the Pacifica was looking for a secretary director, any publication, and what publication were that went through the country that let all the communities know that we were looking for a secretary director. And second, my question will be in terms of the amount, the number of resumes that you got, and if you can break down and tell how many were from the African-American community, from the Latino community, as well as other communities, if that is possible.
Can I just interrupt one second? There was a report about this process that actually I wrote and posted last week that has the list of where it was, where the job announcement was posted. I don't know if any of us has that right now, but Miguel, if you didn't get that yet, I'll email it to you tonight. You know, I don't have it here. I don't know if anybody else has a copy to give you. We can answer that. I don't know if we have the breakdown from the 65 of men, women, different ethnic groups, different races. I know in the nine, I mean, we can do that. We can look that up. I don't know if we have it at our fingertips. Of the nine people, four were people of color. Two were African American. One was a Arab American, and one Filipino. And five were white. I believe it was five women and four men.
Also, Miguel, in terms of outreach, each of the five stations ran ads indicating we were looking for executive director and where you send your resume to, who you call. And after Leslie's suggestion that we open it up even more, I think it was the New York Times, the Washington Post.
Yeah, it's actually a fairly long list.
A long list of
places. I mean, it could have been a lot longer if we had more money.
We'd be very frugal about it. But on the other hand, we believe that we did attract people from all over the nation, not just our five areas. And it was a broad search because none of the committee members came to this process with a candidate in mind. We were sincerely looking to try to find the best we could find for the Pacifica Foundation.
I am not a terribly well-informed person. I was one of the candidates. I felt that the process was absolutely fair.
What's your name?
And I'm Daniel Del Solar.
Oh, okay.
I was one of the applicants. And I am, as I said, I'm not especially informed, and I heard about it. And I thought that it was an extraordinarily fair, and I have experience on national hiring, and I commend your process. Thank you.
Thank you. Let me just say that I think for all of us involved in this process today and over the weeks and months, but especially today when we did the last interviews as a full board and then deliberated among ourselves quite a lot of time, this was not easy. We had two excellent finalists, and in fact wish it was spoken during the discussion, wish that we could hire both of them. But we, in fact, had to hire one person. And the hiring of this person doesn't diminish the qualities and skills and what the other person would have brought to the job. But we had to make a choice. This is a choice that, while there were differences among us, in the end, we agreed that this was a unanimous decision, that this full board supports Dan and this hiring, and we invite the rest of the Pacifica community to join us in that support for Dan. There is a tremendous amount of work, we all know. Whatever the limitations and weaknesses of the process was, and yes, it could have been fuller and deeper and longer, but we think it was a fair and honest process. And again, we invite you all to use this as a time to build greater unity within our ranks and to join us in our support for Dan and give him support. And by support, I don't mean that you don't raise criticisms, that you don't challenge him when he needs to be challenged. Support includes those things. But that we do that in a way of looking forward and not looking behind on this particular issue and keep the process moving.
Madam Chair.
Thank you.
There are two comments I'd like to make. As a member of the search committee, I would like to commend our chair. I thought he did a superb job in terms of attempting. I mean, it's never good with a progressive group to try to get everybody and get everything done. But I thought our chair did an excellent job of trying to reach out not only to the board people but to others, and in the process of trying to find an executive director, of going as far as we could with many of the people to get input about others who had worked with them or who had been involved in a number of ways. But as our chair says, we were charged with making a decision, and so we had to move forward in terms of being able to do that. But I thought we did it in a very fair way. And for the booer out there, you know, and some of you know me, and I've been very good this weekend. But I've been very good this weekend. But for the booer out there, what I want to say to you is that I started off being vehemently opposed to the person that we ended up selecting. I did not feel, you know, I go back to saying to the point in which we appointed him as the interim director, I was opposed to that. And so in the 5-month period of time, given an opportunity to sort of see and to understand and see him really work, I really hope, Mr. Boer, you will join with me in giving him an opportunity, you know, to do the job. And so I just wanted to say that. Thank you.
I just want to say that people who have been following closely this struggle and know the state of the network when the new management was installed, who know the incredibly difficult circumstances under which the national staff and local staff operated, who were present yesterday and heard the articulate, deep knowledge of the system expressed by individuals who participated in the talk with us, the finalists, would understand that we indeed wound up with the best. And we are where we are today, having reduced the budget deficit from $5 million to $1.5 million, and to really be, as Lily said, where we're controlling the situation rather than being controlling by it, then we would appreciate where the distance we have traveled. And with the efforts, the great efforts of Dan Coughlin.
So, thank you. So I want to thank Marion for the presentation
Leslie.
And the work of this committee. I think this committee's work is done, and therefore the committee is done.
Leslie, let me. I was going to ask that the board give Joyce Snowden a round of applause. I mean, she was.
Joyce
Herculean in
the
job.
Person
who got all these resumes, sorted them all out, got them back to us.
And again, Joyce Snowden is the human resources manager for.
Joyce, that's Joyce. Stand up, Joyce.
Carol Spinner.
Also, Leslie,
I'm not Joyce with the earphones.
I don't have the history some of y'all have, but it's my understanding that the process we used last night was almost unprecedented in the sense of allowing, at least in recent times, allowing input and questioning by the listening audience on possible executive director. I thought that was an open process to give everybody a chance to ask questions via their written questions, et cetera. And again, I just want to try to show that this board has come a long ways in, first of all, unifying itself, and two, being very sensitive to our listeners to have input in a way that sort of was not damaging, was not character assassination. And I loved it. It was great.
Right. Thank you. Okay, Carol and then James. And then
here's Carol Spooner from the KPFA Signal Area.
I joined the full board in lending my support to Dan, and I ask that everyone else help Dan with this very difficult job. I think that the greatest weakness that we have seen, and we hear from all of you, and that we recognize ourselves, is our communications and our responsiveness to the many people who want to help us rebuild. And I think that the board is committed to opening the structure up so that we can utilize the energies of all the wonderful people who saved it, and to helping Dan to do that. And we hope you will also join in that process. I also want to say that we've had, we came into a very, very, very difficult situation, and we find ourselves now 5 months later with this enormous reduction in the debt due to you. You. Thank you. And I think that we cannot take credit for that, that you did it. We went on the air, and your jubilation and joy, your ability to come back and help this network, you poured your hearts out and your pocketbooks out. You did that, and I thank you very much for it.
Madam Chair, I was not a part of the vote. But in the interest of unity of this board, I would like to lend my support to Dan. And hopefully, because history will show that I was one of the more ardent opponents of Dan. And I think he's... He's earned my respect, and I just wanted to, again, lend my support. Now, I wouldn't know Dan if he came over here and slapped me. So, Dan, could you raise your hand?
Yeah, sorry, Dan.
Come up here and slap him, Dan.
Okay, I think that we are have completed this agenda item. We have one more item tonight, which is really important. Brian DeShazer, if you can come up here, maybe.
Brian DeShazer is the manager of the Pacifica Archives.
Brian,
he's going to give a report.
Brian heads up our archives. And this is, well, you'll hear what it's got to say.
Hi, I'm Brian DeShazer, and I'm the Archives Manager at Pacifica Radio, the National Archives in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Thank you. First, I'd like to set out a piece of gratitude to this board and to the station managers and to the executive staff and to the listeners for their support of the National Archive. Every time I turn around, I hear the archives mentioned. Last night at the public forum, I heard archives mentioned, and I have to tell you, I beam with pride every time I hear the word. I beam with pride every time I hear a piece of archival programming on the air, and I'm so pleased and proud that it's moving forward. So, since our last report to the board, the Pacifica Radio Archives have made significant progress towards the unit's objectives in many areas of concern, including the most important, preservation of and access to the PRA collection. In the next quarter, PRA will develop an updated, actionable, long-term plan for improved preservation, digitization, cataloging, and electronic, web, and physical access to Pacifica's archive recordings. The plan, including collection assessment and funding strategy, will be undertaken with the assistance of Larry Applebaum, a supervisor in the Sound Division of the Library of Congress, and archives consultant Addie Gevins. Outreach activities included this past quarter attending the national conferences of the National Federation of Community Broadcasters, the Association of Recorded Sound Collectors conference. The archives promoted visibility of the collection, forged important relationships, and made it clear that PRA is widely regarded as the premier source for audio documentation of the 20th century political activism, thought, and culture from the leftist and progressive perspectives. Services to the Pacifica stations included providing programs and programming materials from the archives, creating original programs, and new fund drive premiums. And PRA participated in both national fund drive and station fundraising efforts, including appearances by myself on air. And in the new environment at Pacifica, PRA has experienced an unprecedented atmosphere of support, enabling the archives to work effectively with the Pacifica Radio executive team, station management, programmers, and local community. The archives is honored to participate in the process of realizing a more cohesive, responsive, and democratic Pacifica. The urgent needs of the archives, however, are very real. And this past quarter, we got a really good handle on what that is. At the last board report, we really didn't know what it was. We knew it was huge. We knew we sort of estimated, and I think an audience member calculated it at somewhere around the $4.7 million. With the assistance of Larry Applebaum and Eddie Gavins, we sort of got a better handle on where we are, assessed the standards of the archives, which are inadequate, and have a new estimate as to what we really need to do. And I can't really give you a big dollar amount because we've just sort of collated that information just a few days ago. The numbers are staggering, however. But with the response to the archives and the material and the work of the archive staff, I'm confident that we can move forward and be successful in the preservation of this collection. The finances of the archives have done really well this past quarter. In tape sales, we increased our tape sales 139%, jumping from $6,900 to $16,500. And it has exceeded its revenue projections. Just this June 14th, we met the annual revenue projection in tape sales and affiliate income. More consistent on-air mention of the archives on national network programs, mention of the archives on station programs, inclusion of the 1-800 number, tape order number, and website promotion and development were the keys to this success. During the last year, PRA has not received a lot of monies from central services funding from the stations. So in this quarter, we seek to have those funds generated and given to the archives for the rest of this fiscal year. When the now anticipated payment is made, PRA expects to meet its fiscal year 2002 budget. And PRA is gratified to the network for committing to hold a national fund drive for the archives in the near future. We anticipate that the drive will allow PRA to quickly move forward on getting past the urgent needs, such as the immediate need to begin search process for the cataloger and professional archivist position. Now, as far as the collection is concerned, the physical collection, condition of the collection is at a critical stage. We projected immediate preservation and conservation costs of well over $4.7 million, as I mentioned previously. This past quarter, we worked diligently to further understand and assess the problems it faces in this area and to create a strategy for dealing with them. In May, a leading expert in this area visited PRA and made informal recommendations. Again, Larry Applebaum is senior studio engineer and supervisor of the Magnetic Recording Lab for the Motion Picture, Broadcasting, and Recorded Sound Division of the Library of Congress. And incidentally, Mr. Applebaum has been a WPSW programmer for more than 20 years. Problems which require immediate action include the deterioration of the tape, the lack of funding, outmoded duplication and salvage equipment, insufficient staffing, and the lack of directorship, and inadequate storage space. Last week, Addie Gavins, Archives consultant and longtime Pacifica producer, was engaged to help PRA develop appropriate grant proposals. Initial meetings were conducted between myself and representatives of the National Endowment for the Arts, and Verna Avery Brown made some connection with the Ford Foundation. So we will be pursuing those grant proposals, grant possibilities, as well as others from the Paul Robeson Fund, the Los Angeles Cultural Affairs Department, and other local community grant possibilities. In the area of staffing, in May, the Archives hired Maria Kim as a part-time website developer, focusing on creating a better functioning site. She immediately solved some of the long-standing problems. A shopping cart function was added to the Archives website, resulting in an immediate increase in both online revenue and communication with PRA's online community of users. At the last board meeting, we reported that we had more than 1,000 visitors to our website, and had only been in existence for a month at that time. We now have well over 9,000 visitors, yeah. So we know that the people are visiting and keep looking at it as we develop it. The address is www.pacificaradioarchives.org. Thank you for asking. Right. Mariana Berkovich has taken over the duties of business manager in the archives and continues to be one of the point persons for the affiliate stations, and has collected over $79,000 in affiliate contract money. Mariana also visited Washington, D.C. and helped out in the National Finance Office in with the archives accounts. So we're very proud and grateful to Mariana Berkovich, who has been with the Pacifica Foundation for more than 25 years. Services to Pacifica stations have been great this quarter. Contributions to the national fundraising efforts. This quarter, PRA played an important role in the efforts to decrease the National Foundation debt. PRA staff participated in producing archival tape and on-air discussion of excerpts in the Save Our Signal National Fund Drive for KPFK. For the April 20th Mobilization for Peace, I and Mark Torres participated in the coverage of the broadcast. And just on June 19th, a few days ago, we produced 2 hours of programming on the civil rights movement and the pacifist ideology, and welcomed guests Congresswoman Maxine Waters, Father Philip Berrigan, author Howard Zinn, and author Matthew Lazar to listen to historical archival clips and give commentary to their relevance to history and the human rights issue. And I must say that I'm very proud of the programming that we did for that evening. It was very exciting to have those guests on and to respond to that material and really give it new life. Mm-hmm. The premium.
Thank you.
I believe it was the first time in well over a decade that the Archives has been given that much time on air, and I'm very grateful for that, and I look forward to doing it again. And as far as premiums for the station, so the premiums that you, the listeners, call in and respond to, the feedback from the stations and the initial orders for the Fund Drive premiums have been positive. Included in the offerings from the Archives were new speeches by Robert Fisk, Noam Chomsky, Dr. Helen Caldicott, and Michael Moore. Compilations of archival recordings of Malcolm X and Langston Hughes also proved to be very exciting for the listeners. Enhancing the premiums also helped the increase of revenue for the premiums. We just changed to CD format. With the help of Lab Chair David Adelson, we had donations and got our first CD recorder, CD duplicator, CD labeler, and cassette duplicator. So this allowed PRA to provide Fund Drive premiums to stations in CD format, and that helped the stations in their record-breaking Fund Drives. In March, Archives distributed public service announcements to the Pacifica stations and affiliates to mark the 25th anniversary of the death of civil rights activist Fannie Lou Hamer. PRA produced the PSAs using the historical tapes provided by the Archives. And with the committee that put together that PSA, we discovered through their research that the Pacifica Radio Archives holds more audio recordings of Ms. Hamer than anyone in the United States or world. The Archives continues to collect and make copies available to listeners at cost and upon request of current Pacifica programs, Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman, Explorations with Michio Kaku, and This Way Out, and other local programs. The process of establishing a presence and identity on Pacifica stations of the Archives as a unit of the network is adding to the value of the network and the local station and to the listener. It is also contributing to the awareness of the nationwide Pacifica community. In the area of development, the Archives broadened its presence in larger arenas by attending, again, the National Federation of Community Broadcasters and the Association of Recorded Sound Collectors Convention. Following the Sound Collectors Convention, Larry Applebaum again visited the Archives and not only updated us on current standards and practices for preservation and digitization, but in addition provided the assessment of the Archives and offered his recommendations, which we are now collating and moving forward with. Following these conferences, brief meetings by myself and Verna Avery Brown with the National Endowments for the Arts and the Ford Foundation has really proven that the grant money is out there for the Archives, for the preservation, access, digitization, and program product production of the materials in the areas of education. So we're really excited to pursue those possibilities and get the money in so that we can not rely so much on this foundation in its current crisis. The challenges for the future are many. And in the areas they are in the preservation, conservation, copyrights and permissions. Let me say that one again, the copyrights and permissions. I've had many questions over the past quarter or the assumption by many people that everything in the archive is available for anyone who can call in and request it. That is not necessarily true. A lot of the material that is in the archive is restricted by copyright issues because it's pre-published materials. If you think of Allen Ginsberg reading his own poetry, the archives do not have records of releases. So the overwhelming task of clearing those rights for the overwhelming material is astounding and something that we really can't do in the broad sense. So strategic planning towards that end will have to be undertaken, and further conferences and perhaps a committee should be put together along with John Krigler to address that issue. In the next few months, PRA plans to invite an informal panel of advisors that include academics, librarians, historians, Pacifica staff, and concerned friends of the archives to address the various areas of concern. In addition to this group, a committee will be created to define the core collection of our materials most likely to be viewed as of historical value. Our intention is to gather a committee from as varied areas of study as there are in the collection. For example, African American studies, Native American studies, gay and lesbian studies, political and cultural studies, contemporary poetry, new music, etc. These will include academics, artists, radio programmers, community activists, lab members, educators, and listeners. A criterion must first be created from which this committee will work from, and in the next few months that's what we will be working on in conjunction with the staff and Addie Gevins and Larry Applebaum. In conclusion, the response and interest from this board, the national staff, the station general managers, the station's staff, and the listeners gives me confidence that the overwhelming task of preserving the existing collection and continuing the acquisition of new programs will never be neglected again, as it has been over the past 10 years or more. Thank you very much. And let me leave you with one final thing, and this is from the Pacifica Radio Archives. Malcolm X, in a speech in Detroit, Michigan, February 14, 1965, said, "Of all our studies, history is best qualified to reward all research. The Pacifica Radio Archives should be there for research for not only the Pacifica community, but for the entire community of the United States and the world, because it is one of the most unique collections in the world." Thank you.
This News, KPFA in Berkeley, KPFB in Berkeley, KFCF in Fresno, KPFK in Los Angeles, WBAI in New York.
Yeah, David Furtick from the KPFK signal area. We have the pleasure of having the archives actually in the building of the KPFK studios. Pacific has been in battle, and the studios at KPFK were a bunker. We were not allowed in as local advisory board members. But during that time, the archives was there, ignored. The red-headed stepchild, even you can see he's even got the red hair for it. It was earlier mentioned that workers often in Pacifica and in all progressive organizations, I've been there, most of you have, are not treated as well inside the organization as workers for whom they're advocating. In the Pacifica archives, the pessimism and cynicism it often sets up is not there. They're enthusiastic. The workers there. I just need to. We've been doing a lot of self-congratulating here, but I really need to congratulate Brian DeShazers in creating in the one unit. There's a lot of optimism and great work throughout the foundation, but the one unit where there's really, I think, an exemplary inspiration and enthusiasm amongst the workers. They're happy. They work hard. They don't get paid. I can't use the word. Thank you, FCC. They don't get paid much, but they're really great. I want to applaud Brian for being an exemplary manager. You're a manager or director?
Manager.
Of the Pacifica Archives, and I want to thank him again for setting that tone.
Thank you. Other questions or comments we'd want to make?
One question.
Yes.
Carol Spooner.
Brian, I know you lost the cataloger in March.
I'm so sorry.
You lost a cataloger in March, is that correct?
Yes, in March our cataloger, no, it was in February.
February?
That our cataloger resigned and then stayed on as a volunteer for about a month but then had to leave. So right now we are in the perilous position of not having any programs being updated. We did have our first intern, professional intern, who's from Cal State Fullerton in the MLS program. He just started last week, so he is picking up the slack and programming the ongoing Democracy Now! Programs and explorations with Michio Kaku.
Okay. My question is, without that cataloger, do you have the volunteer help or do we need to get this into the budget for you?
We do need to get it into the budget because even though volunteers, we welcome volunteers, and we've seen a great new trend in volunteerism in the archive. However, cataloging is a specialized skill. And it really does take a professional cataloger or somebody with the skills to understand the library terms to catalog the programs properly.
Would you say where is that in your priorities as far as allocation of funds?
For allocation of funds, the priorities are when the monies from central services are paid to the archives, I believe that we can at least start a search for a professional archivist and hire a cataloger. And the cataloger is probably the most vital part of the archives right at the moment.
Okay, thanks.
How do people contact you to become a volunteer?
You can visit our website and through email at www.pacificaradioarchives.org, and also we have an 800 number that you can call, which is 800-735-0230. 800-735-0230. We'll welcome any volunteers that we can get.
Thanks. Okay, Max, did you want to ask a question?
What are you doing to ensure that physical protection of the archives?
Just let me repeat the question because he wasn't at a mic. The question for Max is, what are you doing to protect the actual physical tapes?
Max, the
physical tapes are all in cold storage. We did run out of storage space in the archives at KPFK a number of years ago, so we did transfer some of the materials to off-site storage units, which are cold storage. When I came onto the archives 5 years ago, the storage units were not up to standard. So they were on a fourth floor warehouse. It was about 120 degrees when I got there to look into them. So I know that the tapes in there were deteriorating or damaged. I immediately moved them to a cold storage unit. In addition to that, we had put together a shopping list, which the board now has in their hand, of equipment that we need to start preserving and taking care of the deterioration as it is. Part of that, one of those items is convection ovens. we do, from the visit of Larry Applebaum, we did assess some of the actual damage to most of the tape stock. We realized that it is a lot of it is suffering from sticky tape syndrome, which the only way to rectify that is to actually bake the tape and then do a flat transfer. And now the flat transfer process, again, is a specialized skill that